Hello and welcome to Chapter 10 of the Book of Malachim Aleph. My name is Gideon Rothstein, and today we'll be learning about the incident with Malkat Sheva, with the famous Queen of Sheba. And then we're coming sort of towards the ends of our discussions of Shlomo's life. Perek Yud Aleph is already going to be the end of Shlomo's life. So really coming to the conclusion of our discussion of this king and some more of the complexities of his accomplishments are going to be revealed in today's parak. So let's get to it. In Pasuk Aleph, Malkat Sheva Shoma'at et Shema Shelomo L'Shem Hashem V'Tavol L'Nasoto B'Chidot, that Malkat Sheva, the Queen of Sheva, it's a place that we don't necessarily know where it is. I think people think it's in Africa, wherever it is. A woman from the queen of a certain kingdom comes because she has heard of Shlomo's wisdom, right? And so she wants to test his wisdom. The chidot, the Radak says chidot is things that are not clear. In other words, she's going to come and challenge him and judge him. So in the Midrashim, you have various sorts of challenges. You have, I think, Midrashim and Gemarot that talk about her lining up boys and girls who looked exactly alike, and Shlomo HaMelech had to tell how which were which, and so he did it by offering them water, and the boys bent down and didn't care about their clothing getting dirty, and the girls did. And then there was a thing about flowers, and he had to find the fake, and so there a bee helped him because he once helped his bee. All sorts of challenges to Shlomo's wisdom, and the question was, would he be able to find his way around it? The way the Radak has it, it's something more, I don't know what the right challenge, what the right word for it is. It's something more, I don't know if difficult, something more sophisticated perhaps. It's more of a question of testing him in the highest reaches of wisdom, whatever those may be. As I watch American society, I always wonder about that question of what would be the highest form of wisdom. If you have, today you have many, many people who are very wise in certain areas, but for example, assume there is no God. So a person like that coming to challenge, let's say, Shlomo HaMelech, and I bring up that example because of the words L'Shem Hashem in the Pasuk, so their challenge will be of a different sort. The question would be, they'll challenge them on their own grounds, and Shlomo HaMelech will be able to find out all of their wisdom. So they'll ask him about, I don't know, molecular physics, molecular biology, or nuclear physics, or solid state, or whatever they'll ask him, and he'll answer those questions, and that will prove his wisdom. But will that be the wisdom that he thought of as the wisdom? So the Radak also notes that the Pasuk says, L'Shem Hashem, for the name of Hashem, for in the name of God, all of this wisdom was. And he notes that in that time, the general wise people, the soothsayers, the magicians, all the people who are involved in the higher disciplines of that time, they don't do it L'Shem Hashem. So the Pasuk notes that it was L'Shem Hashem. And that's why she came to see him, to see what his wisdom was and would be. So it gets us into this question. That's a question that's still around today of how much, to what extent does our wisdom compare to outside wisdom? To what extent are our wise men able to function within those standards of wisdom? Here Shlomo HaMelech is proving himself. She's testing him, so it's apparently by her standards, and he's going to accomplish great things by virtue of that. So Pasuk Bet, V'tavo Yerushalayim B'chal Kaved Me'ot, she comes with a great retinue. Gemalim Nosim B'samim V'zahav Rav Me'od, she goes with camels bearing great gifts, spices and gold, V'evin Yikara and precious stones, V'tavo Shalomo V'tabarilav Eitkol Shoyayim L'vavach, and she speaks with him all the things that she's concerned with, that she's wondering about, that are bothering her. V'yegayid Lash Shalomo Eitkol Devareha, Shlomo HaMelech tells her all that she's thinking about. In other words, in the course of a life of pursuing wisdom, Malkat Sheva apparently had issues that continued to bother her that she was not sure of how to answer them, and he tells her all that she's worried about. So again, if you want to take this most literally, you'll suggest that maybe he had some form of telepathy. He was able to read into her heart or read on her face what was bothering her, and that's what he told her. The Radak's version of this, of having been that she would come to him with her various issues within wisdom, would then mean that no, she would pose the question, but he was able to answer problems and quandaries that she had found troublesome. There was nothing he couldn't handle in Pasuk Gimel. No challenge of wisdom that he couldn't handle. That's an interesting claim to make about a person. In our days, if you had a person who had no challenges of wisdom, then he would know everything, because we tend to, once we've conquered a problem, go on to the next problem. But there are periodically, certainly periodically, there are people who assume that we have discovered everything we need to know, or just are able to feel comfortable that they've accomplished all the wisdom necessary. I like to mention it because I think it's interesting that at the end of the 19th century, one of the British lords, a scientist, Lord Kelvin, Lord Rutherford, I think it might have been Lord Kelvin, had said that science was pretty much done. They had figured out all of the problems that they needed to do. They were just wrapping it up, and then they would move on to, and then they would be done. They would have figured out everything pretty much. And then, not 20 years later, Einstein changed the world, and also quantum mechanics changed the world. So it's interesting to see that Malkachiva comes and poses these questions to Shlomo HaMelech, and he's able to solve all of her problems. So that whole idea of being able to solve all of the problems within discipline is an interesting expression. It suggests that they were, I don't know, maybe on the cusp of not realizing how little they knew. Although Shlomo HaMelech's Sfarim do, but he wouldn't necessarily emphasize that to her. Pasuk Dal, Materi Malkachiva, Eid Koch of Machlova, Bait Asher Bana. She sees all his wisdom. And she sees the house. I have in other discussions of this Sefer noted how much Lomo was into building. Note now the positive side of all that building. Malkachiva comes. She's not only taken with Shlomo's wisdom. If Shlomo were living in a hovel because he had learned that, you know, physical possessions are unimportant and he was living there, but he had all the same wisdom, it's not clear, or it seems pretty clear, that she would not have been as impressed. Same thing in Pasuk Hey, Ma'achal Shulchano, Moshav Avadavu Ma'amad Misharetavu Ma'amushehem U'mashkav Ve'olato Asher Ya'ale Beit Hashem Lo Hayavach Od Ruach. And the food of his table, and where his servants sat, and where they stood, and where they stood around him, and what they wore, and what they gave him to drink, and all the sacrifices he offered to Beit Hashem. Another issue I've raised in terms of Shlomo, suggesting that he was overly involved in that. The other perspective, and it's an important other perspective, I think both are true, I want to make sure that it's a balanced picture. The other perspective is that Shlomo HaMelech, by doing these things, offering these alone, having this ostentatiousness about him, v'lo hayava al ruach, Malkat Shiva was breathtaking by what she saw. She says, I had heard so far away about your wisdom and about all your issues, all of your wealth and all the things you do, that I heard my land and I didn't believe it. I couldn't believe there was such a man in the world. Until I came and I saw it myself. And they did not tell me the half of it. You have added wisdom and goodness to what I have heard. So this is sort of the high point of what being a Shlomo HaMelech was all about. He has wisdom, and it's L'Shem Hashem. It's connected to his service of God. He's connecting it to. I want to make sure that we understand that I'm giving him the credit for this. He's connected to L'Shem Hashem, and he has managed to portray and exude an image, and nowadays we call it celebrity, but it's celebrity in this context, specifically for the purpose of increasing the awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. So that is the highest form of what being a Shlomo HaMelech could be, and here we see it in action. We're going to see the negative side of it in the next parak, but it's important to see the positive side of it. And nobody tells us, the Sefer never sits down and says, and Shlomo HaMelech said, I'm going to do this to impress the whole world. But that's what we see happening, so it's at least reasonable to say that's what he intended to have happen by it, and that's what it was for. And that it was never about Shlomo being into building and Shlomo being into animals and sacrificing. It was about Shlomo HaMelech understanding the needs of his era, the needs of his time. So everything I've said until now should be balanced with this perek, and therefore should help us come to understand that there's a delicate balancing act that has to be done on all of these things. The question of how much do you work on impressing those around you in the ways that they're able to accept, and how much do you just seek the truth in the way that the truth is done. So as I mentioned earlier today, had Shlomo HaMelech chosen to live in a hovel, that might have been a reasonable choice in terms of the real, any kind of ultimate value in physical possessions. But in terms of being Shlomo HaMelech and fulfilling his mission of bringing the wisdom of God into the world and having everybody see it and appreciate it, so it wouldn't have worked at all. So back now in Pasuk Chet, Ashrei Anashecha, So this word ashrei is generally translated as happy or blessed. It means they have a good lot in life. They are living well. They are lucky. What are they lucky? Ashrei anashecha, your people and your servants who stand before you always and hear your wisdom. Ashomim et chochmatecha, get to hear your wisdom. Yeshem alkecha baruch, let your God be blessed, Ashercha Feitz Bekha, who has chosen you, Letitcha al Kisei Yisrael, to place you on the throne of the Jewish people. Be'ahavat Hashem Yisrael le'olam, it is a marking of Hashem's eternal love for the Jewish people. Vayisimcha le'melech, making you their king, la'asot mishpat, utztaka, to do justice and charity. A very strong confirmation that Shlomo HaMelech's kingdom was in these ways successful. I would, I guess, wonder that we never hear of Malkat Shiva again. We never hear of her converting. We never hear of her abandoning idol worship. Nor do we hear that about, we're going to hear about now in the coming Psukim, the tributes that flowed into Shlomo HaMelech. So they didn't manage to make it to the next level, the level of, well, if he's so great, not only do we have to give him money, not only should we worship at his temple, but we should abandon all other worships, as he does, or as he says we should. So that doesn't seem to happen in Shlomo HaMelech's time. Perhaps that was a step too far. Also, we'll see in coming Prakim that his son does not apparently share in the wisdom that his father had, or learn from his father about the right ways to act in all ways. It's, again, a complicated picture. So these are the kinds of issues to follow. Shlomo HaMelech pursues a path. He adopts certain attributes of building, of wealth, of ostentatiousness. And the question is, and we know why, or we seem to know why, and we can measure his success or look at his success and wonder about how it all worked. Pasuk Yud, Malkat Sheva does something that is not to me intuitive, but apparently was to them. She gives him money. She gives him a lot of money, 120 talents of gold, a lot of spices, and precious stones. You never had an abundance of spices like what the queen of Sheva gave to Shlomo HaMelech. So this urge to gift giving is an interesting one. It's not quite tribute, because he wasn't, I don't think, close enough that she felt the need to avoid him attacking her. It was an outpouring, an expression of affection for who Shlomo HaMelech is and what Shlomo HaMelech was. So Justin, that was just the way it goes at the time. In upcoming, we'll see other people doing the same thing. So here it is: Yudala v'gam oni chiram, Hashem nasa zahav me'ofir, hevi me'ofir atzei al mugim harbe me'od, ve'even yikara. Now that we are off the topic of Malkat Sheva, we hear more about all of the vast wealth that came into Shlomo HaMelech. We're not off the topic of Malkat Sheva, but we're talking about that the ships of Chiram that brought in the gold from Ophir also brought in almug wood and a lot of precious stones. Vayasa melech ratzeha almugim mis'ad levet Hashem levet HaMelech. He used this wood to sort of surround the king's palace and to surround the Beit HaMikdash, to surround it, to support it, to make a railing for it. V'chinerot u'nevalim lasharim, and he also made instruments out of it. Lovach chein atzeh amulgim l'nirah ad hayom hazeh. This is another example of where the amounts that came in were unparalleled as far as the Navi knows. So that's sort of a brief digression, because she brought in bosem, she brought in spices that had never been seen that amount before, so we see other things that were unprecedented. Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'hamelech Shlomo natan l'malkat Sheva et kol cheftzach asher she'ala. So the pasuk says he gave her whatever she wanted. Rashi thinks that the definition of gave her whatever she wanted is that he taught her whatever she felt like she wanted to know. So the simpler reading obviously would have been that he gave her gifts in return as well. Just like she gave him gifts, he gave her gifts, and he gave her gifts of whatever she wanted. But Rashi doesn't take it that way. He thinks it's a matter of wisdom and giving her all she wanted to know. Now, what strikes me in that claim would be then that it's only what she wanted to know rather than what he wanted her to know. That's also something that I always wonder about, meaning when you have a person of the wisdom of Shlomo, he knows all the things. She comes, she tests him, she finds that he is indeed wiser than she could possibly imagine, and then She asks him questions and he gives her answers. All that she wants to know. So if you're reading it Rashi's way, perhaps Rashi would have said, although he doesn't say it explicitly here, perhaps he would have said that he gave her more wisdom than she would have, than she realized that she wanted. Perhaps one could have said something like along those lines. But he doesn't say that, Rashi. So he doesn't say that. So we're left to wonder about that. But would have been a possibility. And then the question of how much was Shlomo HaMelech able to push her along on the path to the highest wisdom, to Tinoi Hashem, and things like that, not so clear, right? Because the next words are Vatif and Vatelech L'Artza, He Va'avadah. She turns and she goes back to her land, she and her slaves. So it's an important encounter. It's an encounter that Tanakh feels the need to highlight, but not so clear exactly what was accomplished with it. He got in 1 year of gold 666 talents of gold. So you'll notice she gave him about a fifth of a year's worth of his yearly income in the year she came. Aside from all the people who came to Yerushalayim, who came to Eretz Israel, peddling and doing business, and all of the kings of the surrounding lands and the various governors, they also always brought gifts. So this is sort of an economic kind of an issue within the politics, that just by virtue of being a center of the region, or perhaps of the world, Shlomo HaMelech gets a lot of money coming in. So he makes 200 tzina. So my English says targets, but the more traditional commentators, Rashi says on a tzina, it's makevet radam bishlosha v'chotav, v'ushamar v'sefet yilim, katzina ritzon ta'atareno, that you surround him like a tzina with ratzon, with goodness, and with blessing. So this seems to be just an expression of the amount of extra gold that he had, that he made 600, that he made 200 of these, each one of them having 600 gold in them. Then he made 300 shields of gold. 3 pounds or 3 measures of gold went into each shield. And he gives them in Beit Ya'ar HaLevanon. So Beit Ya'ar HaLevanon, we had mentioned earlier in the buildings that Shlomo HaMelech built, was a structure. The Radaka thought it was like a sort of a summer home in the Beit Ya'ar, the Beit Ya'ar HaLevanon, and he placed it there. But Chazal, at least, seemed to think that Beit Ya'ar HaLevanon is a veiled reference to the Beit HaMikdash, because the Gemara Yom on Lamitet Amud Bet says, why was it called Levanon? Because it's Malbin Avonot Angel Yisrael. Why is it called Ya'ar? To tell you that just like a Ya'ar makes you melavlev, I think makes you excited, so too the Beit HaMikdash makes you excited. So at least there is a tradition within Chazal that says this Beit Ya'ar HaLevanon was in fact the Beit HaMikdash. He makes a great throne of ivory, and he covers the ivory in silver. That's a fascinating thing. You build it of ivory, but then you cover it over with silver. If you're going to build it, cover it over with gold. If you're going to cover it over with gold already, you might as well make it of something of cheaper materials. But he makes it of ivory, covered with gold, and then Shesh Ma'alot Lakiseh V'Rosh Agol Lakiseh Me'acharav V'Yadot Mizeh U'Mizeh El Mekom Hashav V'Shneim Arayot Omdim Eitzel HaYadot. So the throne has steps, and there was a round behind it, and there were armrests on either side of the seat, and then troublingly or problematically, there were two lions on either side of the seat. U'Shneim Asar Arayim Omdim Sham Al Shesh Ma'alot Mizeh U'Mizeh Lo Nasak Kem Nechol HaMachot, and then on each step there were lions on each side. So interestingly, Tosfos has a problem with that, because Tosfos does not understand how Tosfos does not understand how Shlomo HaMelech was allowed to build a seat like this. There's a Tosfos in Yuma on Dalit Amud Bet where the Tosfos is questioning. Tosfos is questioning the whole issue of being able to make sculptures. So we tend to assume, or at least Sefer Chinuch and the Minchas Chinuch tend to assume, that the primary prohibition there is the Tzurat Adam, a human figure, but there is some question in halacha even about sculpting figures of animals and of the heavens and things like that, and all those issues, there are issues as well as to whether you're allowed to make them or not. So isn't sure as to whether or not as to how Shlomo allowed himself to make these lions. The question actually starts off with a question about machzorim and sidurim that had illustrations in them. Stos says that's a bad because it draws your attention away from thinking about davening. So that's an interesting thing in terms of machzorim and sidurim, whether or not to illustrate them. There are many illustrated ones, and the question for Tosfos was whether that's okay, but not really a problem because they weren't raised, they weren't 3D representations of the animals. But there are haggadot in libraries that are called bird's head haggadot, where they didn't want to make a human form, even in picture form, and therefore they gave bird's head to all the people so they wouldn't be actual people. In this case, Tosfos suggests two possibilities. Either that the problem only applies halakhically, does not apply either other people did it for him, and therefore it's not a problem because the pasuk is lo ta'asuniti, you shouldn't make with me, you shouldn't do it, and it's a problem of you making it, and therefore if Shlomo Melech had other people make it, it's less of a problem. There is a problem, however, of suspicion the Gemara raises of chashta. So the Gemara says, so Tosfos suggests maybe in Shlomo Melech's case there was no chashta because everybody saw it, everybody knew it, and it was there, it was out in the open, so there was no problem of chashta, of suspicion. The other possibility Tosfos suggests is the Medrash suggests that these lions actually were able to move. If you think Shlomo was the wise man ever, you can imagine that he would be able to do such a thing. And that when witnesses came to give testimony before Shlomo HaMelech, the lions would roar and scare the witnesses into telling the truth. If that's true, Tosfos suggests that therefore that perhaps then there was a permission to give to do this because it was in the name of making people tell the truth and making things right, and that's called it's lemegdar milta. It's to guard the truth or to help the truth succeed and win, and that is allowed there, and you are therefore allowed to do such a thing in such context. An interesting claim of the Tosla, similar to Tosla, compares it to Eliyahu and Har HaKarmel, who we'll read about later on, where Eliyahu violates the halakha and the Torah for the purpose of teaching the people how to be better Jews. Here too, apparently, we would be saying Shlomo Melech was allowed to violate the Torah in this way in order to make sure that justice was performed. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, V'chol klei mashkei melech Shlomo zahav. All the things he drank off were gold. V'chol klei beit yara levanon zahav segur. And all of the vessels, all of the things used in beit yara levanon, either beit hamikdash or his summer home, where Doc spoke about, were of the best gold. In kesef lo nechshav v'shlomo l'umah. Silver wasn't good enough in Shlomo Melech's time to use in any kind of a dignified way. It was just nothing. Why not? Ki oni Tarshish l'melech bayam im oni Chiram, because he has these ships that go to Tarshish with the ships of Chiram. Achad l'shalosh shanim tavo oni Tarshish. Every 3 years they come, those eid zahav v'kesef, bringing gold and silver. Shen habim v'kofim utvetukim. Not only did they bring gold and silver, they brought all kinds of interesting animals. Shenabim is probably ivory, but kofim and tukim are monkeys or apes, and tukim are peacocks or some kind of a bird. So he had it all. And he was greater than anybody around in wisdom and in wealth and in wisdom. And therefore they're all looking to come and to have audiences with him. To hear the great wisdom that God had placed in his heart. When they come, they bring gifts. So year by year, they're all bringing, there's a flow of people coming to visit, to see him, to learn from him, and bringing him gifts. Almost like a Hasidic Rebbe. So, Yeah, so I've made my points about these issues, but you see them coming into play here. Shlomo is famous and wealthy and spreading his wisdom around the world, but apparently only to the extent possible. And certainly, we see no evidence that there was any advance in the cause of monotheism in Shlomo Melech's time. The God of the Jews might be becoming famous, but he wasn't winning out over all the other surrounding gods, as far as we can tell. And that's in Chav Vav and Chav Zayin and Chav Chet. And Chav Tet tells us about another aspect of Shlomo HaMelech's kingship that is more problematic. The wives we're not going to hear about here. We'll hear about them soon in Perek Yud Aleph. But the Torah sets up three prohibitions for a king in particular. Not to have too much money, not to have too many horses, and not to have too many wives. So the horses, the Torah gives a specific reason for it, because maybe in having a lot of horses, you will return to Egypt, because at the time, Egypt was the source of the greatest horses. So now in Pasuk Chavav, we see, Vayasev Shlomo Rechev Ufarashim, Vayilo Elef Ve'erbamio Rechev, he had 1,400 chariots, Shnimasar Elef Parashim, and 12,000 horsemen that had to rotate through, Vayanchem Ba'arei HaRechev, Ivim HaMelech B'Yushalayim, he left them in special cities, for the chariots as well as in Jerusalem. Vayetan HaMelech had a kesef Yerushalayim, Kavanim, silver was like stones in Jerusalem, Vayetan HaRazim Natan Kashikmim HaShem Bashfila LaRov, and the cedars were like sycamore trees in the lowlands, meaning sycamore trees are native to Eretz Israel, those grow easily, and he imported so many HaRazim from Hiram, you'll remember, for the price he had to pay him of the 20 cities or whatever, they all have comes with a cost, but he brought them in abundantly. I would just point out that the Gemara notes that here it says that he has wealth ka'avanim, silver ka'avanim. So Gemara in Sanhedrin says, I don't understand. No, not the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Yeah, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, sorry, and Chaf Aleph Amud Bet says, in the Devarim it says that silver and is not even considered as anything in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. And here, it says, it's only considered like stones. So which is it? Is it nothing, or is it stones? And the Gemara says, Lo kashya kodem, kan kodem shenasash namor bat paro, and kan achar shenasash namor bat paro. So bat paro seems to happen fairly early in Shlomo HaMelech's kingdom, although we're not told exactly when, but the Gemara seems to see that already as a delineation point. For all that the Radak claimed that it wasn't bat paro herself, who is going to lead Shlomo's heart astray, and we don't see that she does so much in Perek Yud Aleph, as we'll see. But nonetheless, the Gemara links the event of marrying Bat Paro to a diminution of his wealth. He was even wealthier before then. Pasuk Chavchet, Motza Hasusim Hashem Shlomo Mitzrayim. And he gets the horses, as the Torah predicted he would, from Mitzrayim, Umigveh Sochari HaMelech Yikchu Migveh B'Mechir. And they get the horses from Kivei, they have merchants of the king, and they buy them with a price. So the Gemara understands this to mean that since, after all, he married Bat Paro, so he has connections in Egypt, namely his father-in-law, that his father-in-law allowed what he didn't allow to anybody else in the world, Shlomo Melech's agents to set up a city in Mitzrayim so they could handle the horse trade that was constantly supplying horses to Shlomo Melech. Gemara notes in Sanhedrin as well, that this is exactly the reason why the Torah does not generally reveal the reasons for the mitzvah that he gives. So the truth is, if you look in the Torah, there are many more reasons given than Gemara seems to be implying. But the Torah doesn't generally give reasons for its mitzvot, because Shlomo Melech was the wisest of all men. The Torah revealed the reasons for a couple of mitzvot, and Shlomo Melech assumed that he was therefore exempt from observing these mitzvot. So that's a point the Gemara makes that the Rambam echoes in the Mishnah Torah. Even though the Rambam is highly in favor of finding reasons for the mitzvot, the danger in reasoning and thinking about mitzvot is that that can easily and perhaps almost necessarily lead us to believe that if we understand the reason and the reason does not apply to us, that we do not need to keep that mitzvah anymore. And it was exactly to avoid that the Torah doesn't do it. So here too, the Torah says, because you're going to go back to Egypt, someone else says, well, I'm not going to go back to Egypt. I understand the reason I won't go back to Egypt. Turns out, people go back to Egypt for the horses. Visus v'chamishim u'mea, they get a merkava for 600 pieces of silver, or whatever the measure of silver is, shekels of silver, and a horse for 150. V'chei l'chol malchei achitim, malchei aram b'yadam yotziu, and they also help the trade in horses spread to other areas around as well. So that is the horse trade, and that is the first example of Shlomo Melech falling prey to the errors that the Torah had predicted. We'll see another one, a more serious one, in Perek Yud Aleph tomorrow. Have a great day.